Hey, this is Scott Snyder, and you're listening to Shed Talk.
Add your kids. Add your wife. And add your husband because they're raping everybody out here.
Coming straight at you from the heart of the California Redwoods, it's Shed Time.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Winning. My jokes are bad. Watchmen, Chapter 7. And the last chapter of Watchmen, Watchmen Chapter 6, we had Rorschach's story. It was the story of Rorschach's metamorphosis from being Kovacs to Rorschach to the Rorschach after.
For sure.
Child killer slang. Watchmen Chapter 6 was very, it was heavy. You know, it was an intense story. And where we had the intensity of number 6, not to say that Chapter 7 is not intense, but it's an intense in different ways. I think it explores different emotions in different ways than Chapter 6 addressed. It's funny. There's a lot of humor in Chapter 7.
Definitely.
And it's a nice alleviation to the tension that we have in 6.
Definitely.
So Chapter 7, I think it's kind of like Dan Dreiberg's story.
Okay, yeah, it's the chapter most committed to him, right?
Yeah.
And we get to know most about him and his background, right?
We get to kind of understand more about Night Owl and more about what drives him to be Night Owl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the story about how he puts the costume back on, about why he puts the costume back on.
Yeah.
And it definitely propels... there's a lot of this story that really, I think... ties in a lot of the other strands that were going on with Watchmen.
Definitely the new sequence kind of does, right?
Yeah, and it pushes... It's definitely a step forward in progressing the overall conspiracy aspect of Watchmen.
Okay.
Because Chapter 6 was mostly... It was Rorschach, you know? It's like we kind of deviate away from the whole fight... conspiracy going on. Exactly.
Conspiracy thing. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Well, you still have, you constantly have the tension of the coming Armageddon or the coming nuclear conflagration.
Right, right.
Definitely at 6, we sort of shot off into Rorschach's view of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in 7, I think we really get into Dreiberg's view of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely not as dark and as grim as what we saw with Rorschach.
No, they're very different.
Exactly.
God, they're so different. But they work together, that's...
We get to find out a little bit about Dan Dreiberg's past. Mm-hmm. When he was young, he was, as indicated in the story, in Chapter 7, and with the tidbits that we get at the end of each issue of Watchmen. In Chapter 6, we had the notes from Rorschach's, or the
journal?
Yeah, Rorschach's writings from school.
Oh, yeah, at the end. I know what you mean.
Yeah,
of course,
and in this one we have an ornithology article.
Written by Dreiberg?
Yeah, and there's a lot of references in an article to mythological characters. It's just interesting how that little tidbit throws out the fact that as Dan Dreiberg was growing up, he was heavily influenced by mythology, and he especially liked characters such as Merlin. His ship,
Archimedes.
The ship that we get to know, that we've already been introduced to in other chapters, Archimedes, was Merlin's...
Pet owl.
Exactly.
Okay, I didn't look at this, but interesting. That's where you get the whole mythology background, and hence the name of the chapter.
Right, and the reason that he, probably the reason that he bonded with Hollis Mason...
Mm-hmm.
Is the fact that he was Night Owl, and he already had a liking to owls
and mythology, and here's a living god in his eyes.
And he knew him in his personal life.
Yeah, definitely. He felt so proud to be sitting there with a hero. Oh my God, I'm sitting here drinking a beer with Night Owl.
Right.
Yeah.
And in Dan Dreiberg's basement, he still has all the relics from his days as being Night Owl.
Yeah, he's got his version of the giant penny and the dinosaur in the Batcave.
Exactly. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, he's like Batman in that he's rich. We find out that he has a master's degree in aeronautics from Harvard. He's an expert in ornithology, the study of birds. And in a lot of ways, like Bruce Wayne, he's a rich genius that...
Who's got a lot of tech.
Right, and decided to use that tech in a way to become a hero.
Right.
Or vigilante, or whatever.
Whatever you want to call it.
And
very different in motivation.
Exactly.
Definitely.
We have, of course, Bruce Wayne being motivated by guilt and anger.
Dryburgh was bored. Dryburgh was bored and had a desire to seek adventure.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the world's lucky that he... happened to like, good guys instead of bad guys. He could have been a supervillain, but that was just like a coin toss for him. Maybe I should hold off on this, but I really want to talk about how different he and Rorschach are and how I find it so strange that they ever worked together. But then again, I said the same things, how I was surprised that Rorschach admired the comedian, but then we found out later reasons why he would, because of the whole father thing that he's projecting on him. So whatever, I'm sure it'll make sense in the grand scheme of things, but right now it's very perplexing.
Yeah, and I like how they tie in the whole fact that he has a master's in aeronautics, and so there's there's an explanation given as to how he knows how to build all this equipment.
Right, he's got a radar, undetectable, hovercraft.
So he's
his basement.
Super rich guy that
he knows how to do it himself. More Tony Stark than
A little bit of Tony Stark, maybe just a little bit, but I see more Bruce Wayne. Just the fact that
it's underground.
And he's using the subway tunnels.
Right.
He's bought those portions.
And he's a night guy. It's built into the name. Yeah. I mean, he's more of an allusion to Batman.
Yeah.
I'm sure on Moore's part.
It's a little bit like that Earth 2 Owlman character.
The Thomas Wayne character.
Anyway.
Only a good guy. Totally. But otherwise, the same.
So the story starts off with Laura Jaspichnik going down, Silk Spectre going down into Dan Dryburgh's basement. She's spending some time in his place because, of course, with John being gone, she goes down into the basement and starts checking out all the crap down there. And she goes, gets into Archimedes, and starts messing around, and she wants to light her cigarette.
Yeah.
Okay, so is that bringing out the fucking cigarette?
Yeah.
That is always I've never really heard a satisfying answer.
What the fuck are those crack pipes?
If Alan Moore ever addressed this, maybe somebody email us.
Someone's
going to
let us know.
But,
what are those glass bubble pipes that they smoke?
Yeah, it's like... they're supposed to be cigarettes. They say it must be tobacco, but are they like little pipes that they pack? I don't know.
You never see them load one or anything.
And the lighters look weird, too. They're like little...
Oh, I never noticed that,
Anyway,
the whole globe...
And everybody smokes them.
Smokes.
Yeah, right.
The whole thing emanates smoke, and yet there's still a little like piece of stem that extends beyond the globe.
It's some weird alternate timeline.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that became cool. I guess it's just the only difference.
Maybe more used to accentuate the fact that this isn't the same time.
This is somewhere else. This isn't exactly the same.
I'm going to create a cigarette.
The same present timeline that me and you live in.
Right. Yeah.
This is some alternate one where Nixon's still
president. Yeah, Nixon's still president.
Exactly.
There's no term limits anymore. They vetoed or they like repealed that.
The Russians have just gone into Afghanistan.
Right.
And they're going
in times of war, there's no term
limits. And because Dr. Manhattan's disappeared,
they feel bold.
They're all like, oh, there's no nuclear deterrent,
so we're going to
just take Pakistan, too.
Right, yeah, they're getting close to the border, exactly.
Right, since Dr. Manhattan's left Earth, the Americans have no real nuclear deterrent left anymore. But yeah, this is an interesting alternate timeline, but...
Right.
At the same time, in the timeline that Alan Moore wrote the story, the Russians had already invaded Afghanistan.
Oh wow!
So it's interesting. What if they kept going into Pakistan?
What if they just kept going? Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. That's interesting.
That is very interesting. Didn't know that.
So if I had been old enough at the time to have
read it and appreciated it when it first came out,
it might have been even more.
Like, whoa!
When nuclear war, especially the fact that nuclear war was, if I had read this at the time it had come out in 85 or 86, it would have been more poignant,
Yeah, at the time when
reality,
nuclear war was...
Because it was more of a, or it was a more of a foreseeable reality.
Okay, yeah, right.
Say. nuclear war on that level where totally. There's, you know, two.
Totally. Well,
two
think of all the 80s movies that were made about it, right? War yeah. games and shit.
Right. Well, and this is the reality of it having actually maybe happening, too.
It was more real then than now, for sure.
Anyway, she's trying to light her the cigarette.
Yeah.
There's a flame button here.
Yeah, right.
It must be the cigarette lighter.
Must be.
Oh, right? No, it's just the fucking the blowtorch.
The fucking flamethrower for the ship.
Yeah, from Archimedes.
Right.
Archie, you know, whatever you
yeah.
want to call it.
Archie, yeah.
And, you know, she freaks out. She hears Dan Dreiberg's upstairs. She hears a scream. Has this whole flashback memory of Rorschach telling him about the mass killer.
Who's next?
Yeah, who's next? Maybe you. So he thinks, oh, shit's going down
shit.
The basement.
Yeah, someone's trying to kill Lori.
Yeah, right. So the mass killer is after Lori. Right. He runs down there. The fire's going on and all that shit. Archimedes is kind of burning. They put the fire out. But there's that whole interesting sequence that brings back the whole mass killer aspect of the story.
Right, okay.
There's
just
somebody taking
the
masks
issue.
Out. The whole
yeah, right.
Rorschach's whole Rorschach's conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe looking more and more like reality to Dan. Yeah, so Rorschach and Dreiberg, that's an interesting relationship. Obviously, Dreiberg spent most of his time hanging out with Rorschach before the child killing.
Before
the
exactly.
incident. Because he comments in Chapter 7
how he used
about
to be
how
rational.
He changed.
Uh-huh.
How he changed at some point.
But he just thinks the mask ate his brains.
Yeah, that's
like
what he
that,
said.
Right?
Like,
that's what he says.
He doesn't know. You know,
he doesn't really
he doesn't,
know.
He didn't hear what the psychiatrist was.
Right.
You know,
what the psychiatrist
said. You know, with Dr. Malcolm.
Lucky said. Bastard. Fucking yeah, right. Dreiberg. You don't know how good you have it.
Yeah, right. Dreiberg. Yeah, had the good life.
Yeah, right. If he had saw things from Rorschach's perspective, he'd be a very different hero right now.
Right. When we get into the end of what happens with Dreiberg at the end of 7 here,
yeah,
there's a lot of commonalities between he and Rorschach. And in a lot of ways, Dreiberg is in denial of his desire to do the same things that Rorschach is doing. Only Rorschach is unrestrained completely.
Right, and I think Rorschach has more admirable reasons for wanting to do that.
Exactly, and Dreiberg wants to do the same thing. I think he has the same drives
uh-huh.
as Rorschach, but he... Restrained himself because
right.
of his...
He's, like, ashamed of them.
He's constantly self-deprecating to himself, you know? Like
yeah.
Throughout 7, toward Lori, he's like, oh, that's just silly stuff, little silly childish stuff. Like,
right.
Dressing up in those costumes was childish.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing all this and that was, you know, that was silly. All this stuff down in my basement, I don't know why I keep it around. It's garbage.
But at the same time,
it kind of hints at, like, that she kind of understands his connection with that past. Because she has...
Why he still keeps it around, yeah.
She has
right.
the same connection, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
Because in a lot of ways, she goes through the same transformation he does in this issue. I think a lot of it's written from his perspective. We get into Lori a little bit more in some of the issues coming
We do,
out.
But okay, she was more of a device to kind of get deeper into Dreiberg.
Right. So, okay, getting back into the story again.
Yeah.
The fire's going on down in the basement. He runs down there,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting the fact that there's all this fire. It's almost like a phoenix analogy.
Okay.
Like being reborn from the fires.
Oh,
in
interesting.
It's like, and they're starting the story, the chapter off with this fire and these flames. Kind of like,
put it out.
I think chapter 6 didn't exactly end with the fire, with the transformative fire.
No, that was like halfway through the chapter when they saved the people from the tenement.
I'm talking about the fire in the basement that caused by Archimedes.
Right, okay, it begins with that fire. What do you mean ends with it?
Almost like it's a symbolic, like a fire.
Oh, yeah.
The fire is symbolic in a way.
Yeah, right.
About to go through a transformation.
Right, and they start off the chapter that everything that happens afterwards is like post.
Exactly.
It's like metamorphosis time.
Right, and then they go and she's looking around the basement and they go through the whole part in 7. There's some interesting tidbits that are thrown. I like the use of Night Owl's costume that's on display.
Mm-hmm.
The empty hollow costume.
As if it's watching them the whole time.
It's constantly watching them. Yeah. And the way that Gibbons...
Maybe like calling
them. Right. And the way that Gibbons uses it, it's definitely like this. Like the goggles are hanging there.
Yeah,
you
right.
constantly see these different reflections.
Dreiberg says he feels like he's being watched all the time.
Right.
And Lori thinks he's talking about the mask killer, but he's actually talking about the costume.
And we have in panel 9 on... Page 4,
uh-huh.
you get that really cool image of that zoomed in image of Night Owl's goggle,
uh-huh.
the lens on his goggle, and the smudge that Lori had put in that like she had taken the dust off of it, being cleaned off a little bit, and the direction that
yeah yeah
it's going like after the 12:55, like just like the watchman's badge, right, just right. Like the clock that's about to hit strike midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And in the reflection, you have Archimedes and Dan. Lori standing right next to each other.
Yeah, it's kind of and like the streak, it sort of puts a halo around their heads. They're
right. There's a lot
they're centered in it.
There's a lot of there's a lot of story in that panel.
Definitely summarizes the whole chapter
as they go through the basement. You know, they bring out that interesting photograph.
Of what's her name?
The Twilight Lady.
The Twilight Lady
photograph. And she's definitely like in some kind of dominatrix style, like outfit.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess she was kind of like a villain from his time, mm-hmm. from when.
He nabbed her, yeah.
He nabbed her, but she had like a thing for him.
Yeah, right.
Sent him that picture. And he's like.
And he kept it.
Yeah.
He pretends not to remember her name.
She was a really sick woman.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, he has the same sickness. You know what
okay,
I mean?
Okay, sure, yeah.
Almost, and it's almost like more. Because more has talked about this, like openly. Right. Like when he wrote the story, he definitely talks about how there's a lot of deviant kind of sexual stuff.
Okay.
You know, the superheroes. Like it just. Huh. It's sort of inherent. In the superheroes,
but it never gets treatment in this chapter. For the first time, it does. They save the people from the tenement, and what do? They fuck right away. I mean, it gets them all riled
they
up.
Got like a sexual urge.
Exactly.
Well, remember, okay, it's just like the alley fight that they went through.
Right.
Remember?
Exactly.
Like, they're definitely the way Gibbons really draws it. Them, yeah. That one sequence, the panel when they're up against the wall
together,
like staring at each
shoulder.
Other.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did an all right job in the movie with that one. Oh, yeah, okay. Just to bring that, I don't know why I brought that up, but anyway,
whatever.
We'll talk about the movie some other time. But right,
it'll
it's that same
grind.
Sexual energy.
Definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, the Twilight Lady comes up more. More importantly, she comes back later on during Dreiberg's dream. Right. It's just this whole conversation he has with Laurie though down in his basement. It really shows Dreiberg's denial of his longing to be Night Owl again.
Definitely. Yeah.
Right. After the Keene Act was passed, he stopped being Night Owl.
Mm-hmm.
Did what the law said.
Yeah, right. It was costume, and that was
right.
it.
And that's why, you know, that's why he and Rorschach broke up. That's
right.
Why
Rorschach
kept
going. Yeah,
Rorschach couldn't stop. Rorschach was driven. I like the part when they're back inside of Archimedes, and you see Laurie. They're talking inside of the ship, and you see Laurie pulling out. She wants to smoke. She pulls out of her outfit, out of one of the pockets on her outfit. She pulls out the old cigarettes for you, the aforementioned cigarettes.
Yeah,
uh-huh. And I like it when she's standing, and they have some more of that Batman-esque different suits or whatever for different situations.
Right, right.
Or just that, yeah, that whole
water suit, yeah.
And the water suit, and there's like a radiation suit,
mm-hmm.
and it has this little nuclear symbol on it, and you see Laurie standing right next to it, and she's talking about how she needs to quit smoking, how it's bad for her health. And
right.
You have this reminder right in the corner of that impending nuclear.
Yeah,
Holocaust
that's upon him.
Yeah.
I mean, even the coloring really draws your attention to it because it's got this mm-hmm. kind of plain green background. The only thing that really has any color is Laurie's red dress and this really bright orange and yellow suit to her right.
This whole sequence down in the basement with them eventually emerging, it layers some of Night Owl's history nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And explains a lot of the reasons for... It sort of shows how he has this longing for...
To do it again.
To do it again. And I really like the use of the empty costume and the constant use of it, like how it's watching them
mm-hmm.
and how it's empty, just the fact that it's empty and
right.
how it needs somebody to fill it again.
Yeah, the face, the helmet, or whatever you want to call it, it's designed specifically to like really kind of accentuate that.
Yes.
It's not a cowl that when no one's wearing it, it just kind of hangs or whatever.
Uh-huh.
It's just a garment. This thing, it's got that hole in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. Totally looks like a faceless head.
One of my favorite portions of this chapter is the whole sequence that Moore and Gibbons do of them in front of the TV set. They go upstairs and start hanging out in front of the TV set. And the whole TV sequence is nice because it takes all these tidbits and all these other facets of the story that have been going on thus far and all these different issues and kind of ties them together. Or
yeah.
kind of gives
you a little more information about each one.
And it gives you sort of a cohesion of all these
yeah.
parts of the story.
Totally.
Through this very, very, actually pretty brief sequence of them sitting in front of the TV. Mm-hmm. But it brings in the fact that Rorschach has been arrested. So you kind of get a sense of where exactly this is taking place in conjunction with Chapter 6. Obviously, Rorschach's already been arrested because we see this interview of his former landlord.
Oh, they even talk about it as they're coming up from the basement. They talk about how he got... She's criticizing Dryberg for still believing in Rorschach's conspiracy theory.
For sticking up with him.
Because she says...
Even for entertaining it.
Yeah, John left of his own will and Rorschach killed someone. He's like, nah, Rorschach would have just shoot someone. Too ordinary. Which is true.
Yeah, right.
There's no fucking way. She should know better. There's no fucking way.
Yeah, and he's saying some truth to it because is this all coincidence, you know?
Yeah, right. So, exactly.
Somebody even tried to shoot Veidt. I mean, obviously it's Veidt just trying to, you know.
Veidt trying to cover it up.
Yeah.
But when he characterizes John leaving, she says John left of his own free will. He sees John as being exiled. That's how he characterizes it. So it's not something of his own free will. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She doesn't have cancer, which whatever.
That's right. She mentioned she gets that letter. Oh, I just got a letter. You know, in this chapter, she mentions how she gets that letter. She mentions to Dan how she got a letter saying she doesn't have cancer.
Right.
And just sort of like, there's all these other people from John's life that had... supposedly had cancer or
from proximity to him
whether or not they're given cancer by some other means
Well, clearly we know
there's some hints to it so anyway, you have this mentioning of Rorschach's arrest, and then they talk about how he has these stacks of New Frontiersmen, the magazine, the right wing, the far right wing magazine that Rorschach reads rapidly. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always at the newsstand waiting for it.
Okay, well, hold on real quick before we go into that. What do you make of this landlady accusing him of propositioning?
Right. Crazy. Because he paid his rent on time, did everything, like, you know, perfectly, right?
And we know he's got this, you know, like a phobia about sex.
Yeah.
I mean,
what do you think? Oh, I think it's her being gross and just like just
call him a Nazi pervert.
Just trying to play up to the media.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you're okay. You have no doubt about this.
Yeah. Unless somewhere before Watchmen, they
they get into that. Well, I don't know. I thought it was interesting, just because, like, maybe when he's not wearing the mask, he lets himself do things that he, you know. Because he's not Rorschach at that time, you know? And then he puts the mask back on and fuck, you know, he's back to business or something. Maybe it reveals something about his character, that when he's not wearing the mask, he's got faults too.
Okay.
Weird.
Maybe.
Because he's awkward about sex. He doesn't know how to get it.
Yeah.
Probably a virgin.
Yeah.
Have we talked about that? I remember.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
Okay.
No, we talked about it.
Anyways, okay. So the New Frontiersman.
We had the New Frontiersman, and then the TV sequence shifts to like this brief little interview with the New Frontiersman editor. And in the background, you see the guy that gets the journal, the Rorschach's journal, and at the end of the whole story, we have this cool kind of little prelude to this guy's character, who he is exactly. He works for in the New Frontiersman office, you know. So,
so he's all, well, if Rorschach's a fan of ours, then he must be a proud American or something. He spins it in his favor, right? Isn't that what he? That's what I got from his response.
Frankly, isn't it time we reassess Rorschach as a patriot and American?
Yeah, right. Oh, he reads my magazine. Must be a good American.
It's clean up.
And so are you for reading my magazine.
Right. And then then we see Dr. Malcolm Long, of course, getting interviewed as he goes into the prison to interview Rorschach for the first time. So it gives us a sense of time, a sense of when this is taking place.
Yeah, right. He's just now going in.
We get the reminder of the impending World War III, with the Russians going in the Pakistan, with the little news clip that we see. With the red lines of where the Russians are moving.
Right. Meanwhile, real quick, just the story about the doctor going in to see Rorschach. He literally says at the bottom of the page, he told Pressman he felt confident and optimistic. Mm-hmm. This is him going into the interview with Rorschach, but we all know how that turns out. It's just a cool little reminder.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that's going on the TV is juxtaposed to what Laurie and Dreiberger doing. So it's kind of funny. There's a lot of humor in this whole sequence.
Especially when they get to Veidt's gymnastics routine.
Yeah, exactly. So like when Malcolm Long's talking about being confident and all this other stuff, you know, you have this, and you have this driver totally incompetent.
Being a whip,
Yeah, and that's, it's really cool how, I really like how Dreiberger is depicted as just being like a regular, like, just like just a under, guy. Just, well, not only that, but just like, totally like, depleted. No energy.
Emasculated.
Yeah, emasculated. No energy left. Yeah. And just like run over by whatever. I don't know. Just
the Keen Act.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not like he's been met with a lot of.
Yeah. He's been suppressed.
Misfortune or anything.
It's almost like he's been suppressed by society.
That's about it.
Right. You know what I mean? And he needs to come out of the closet again.
Right. He says that,
I like how we get this little tidbit of Max Shea. And he's the guy that. Of course, the Black Freighter. He's the creator
and the author,
the writer of Black Freighter.
Uh-huh.
And I like how they throw that in there because then we start getting in the Veidt's. We get reminded and also a little bit more insight into
Veidt's conspiracy.
Veidt's whole conspiracy.
Now, I mean, if we didn't know the overall story, we wouldn't know that yet, right? We wouldn't
know that this new story
about inner dimensions meant anything about
that. No, but it's great. It's cool.
It's great.
Yeah, it's cool that it's there. And then we, of course, have the Institute of Extraspatial Studies going on, which is studying interdimensional.
We're just studying interdimensional
space,
looking for extra energy sources.
The Institute for Extraspatial Studies reports exciting and maybe alarming possibilities for opening new dimensions.
Every single one of these news stories has something to do, unbeknownst to the reader, with the overall story.
Then we get into the whole nostalgia commercial. Of course, Veidt's product.
Veidt's cologne or something.
It's kind of a neat, like the whole nostalgia, like just the word nostalgia. Because there's this whole feeling of nostalgia that, of course, Dreiberg and Laurie have for what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole connection that they have with each other. And so it's a nice cohesion right there with the commercial that's going on and what their whole connection going on. And then, of course, we have the gymnastics routine from Ozymandias.
And Laurie making a move on Dreiberg.
Right, and the whole juxtaposition of what's going on.
What the announcer is saying about Veidt.
It's great.
And what's really going on the couch.
And just look at the confidence as he leads up and grabs the bar, beginning his maneuver.
Meanwhile, fucking Dreiberg's over here fumbling on her.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I crushing you?
Oh, am I crushing you? Yeah, sorry. Great. Start apologizing before you.
And here's Ozymandias, doing everything perfectly and fluidly.
Exactly.
And, like, people are in awe of his.
They're cheering him on.
His form.
Yeah.
And here's Dreiberg. He can't even get it up.
Literally.
He's just totally impotent. His energy has been, like, stolen from him by the Keen Act and by his denial of what he really wants out of his life.
His blind obedience to the Keen Act.
But this whole sequence is great, not just because of the story, but because of the humor that's put into it. It's funny. It actually made me laugh. I mean, I was laughing at it again. And it's such a nice, contrast to Chapter 6. Because Chapter 6 is so
dark.
Chapter 6 is the darkest chapter.
Yeah.
In the story.
When we get into
the heart of Rorschach, that's
the darkest
chapter.
And
this is like a night. This is almost like the funniest chapter in a lot of ways.
This is the most lighthearted.
And at the same time, it has a deep story. Story going on. There's a really deep transformation that Dreiberg goes through. After rereading it again recently just for the show, I really have a newfound appreciation for this chapter. There's absolutely no wasted space in this chapter.
Yeah, right.
Everything in it has meaning and it adds to the story. When they finally go to sleep after like Dreiberg passes out and Laurie's sleeping with him, he has this dream. That's why that lady comes to him in the dream. And we have this image of Dreiberg in his regular clothes embracing Twilight Lady like he's always wanted to, or giving in to that desire.
Yeah.
Then his skin breaking away and her skin breaking away. And first, of course, their clothes come off and they're naked.
Oh, right.
But then both their skins break away.
They peel each other's skin off.
And underneath Dan Dreiberg's skin is Night Owl. Yeah. Dan Dreiberg is Night Owl.
Right.
Like it, almost like costume. Almost like his, that's his real true self.
Sure.
Becoming the metamorphosis, the becoming of Night Owl again.
Uh-huh.
And then this Twilight Lady turns into Laurie, wearing her costume also.
Wearing her Silk Spectre
costume. It's like they're, and it's almost, yeah. And then, of course, the whole looming Armageddon comes back once again, and,
right.
they, and they become obliterated in it.
They kiss and they die in it.
And it's almost like
atomic
bomb. And it's almost like this whole the fact that I could be dead tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
And it's almost like it strikes him in the dream, and when he mm-hmm. wakes up, he knows what he wants to do.
Right.
And he walks out. He gets up, and you know, Laurie kind of says, "Oh, John."
Yeah.
You know, she kind of like, you know, kind of murmurs as he gets out, you know, off the couch with her.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, she kind of falls back to sleep. But, you know, that's interesting how he's getting up. She says, John. Almost like she's so used to being with Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Cause
and it doesn't even faze him because he was kind of jealous earlier. Like every time John comes up earlier.
It's almost like he's
makes
already.
Feel weird.
He's changed. It's after this dream, he's changed. He's Night Owl.
Like,
all of a sudden, he's like Night Owl again. And he walks out into his living room. Or into his kitchen, excuse me, and above the sink. And the dew from the morning's like coming off the window.
Or it must still be nighttime, right? Because they're about to go out.
Well, isn't that, that's, no, you're right. You know,
it must be the moon.
It's the moon. And he does the little, he takes the, you know, the dew off the window.
Right.
With the moisture off the window with his finger. And it makes it clear right there. But it's interesting how the moon in the background.
And the two drops of water in the clouds kind of make a smiley face, too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's the whole Watchmen motif. The the whole 1255.
Exactly.
And it's like it's almost like a reinforcement of the nuclear explosion in his dream and the whole fact that time is ticking.
Yeah, right. That's what he came to realize.
It's like, exactly.
It could all end tomorrow.
And then, and as he's going down to the basement, you see a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie was messing with his hair earlier.
Yeah.
It's almost like that whole experience is also part of the transformation. He looks like, his shadow looks like he already has the costume on.
Yeah, his hair's kind of turned up in the corners to look like the costume of
right.
the owl.
And it's intentional. It's totally
sure.
He already
sure.
looks like, he's already transformed, and he goes down and he dons his true skin again, or he puts these goggles,
He puts the goggles on. He wants to see through those eyes again. He's standing there naked with the goggles on.
And
she comes downstairs.
And Laurie comes down.
And he's still kind of fighting it. He's like, I don't know. I feel like I almost want to I wanna go out or something like that. Get some air. And she's like, good idea. Go put on your costume. I'll put on mine. He's like, what?
It's
no.
It's like she wanted to also, though.
Like she's been wanting to the whole time. She's not the one that's been fighting
the reason.
It.
That's
he's
right.
The one
she's
that's fighting it.
She's wanted him to fucking do it.
Yeah. She's been trying to kind of, you know, egg him on a little bit.
Put this shit back on.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this shit down here.
Right, right.
And exactly, this is like the moment, and he puts the costume back on. He's like found himself again.
Yeah.
They get back in the Archimedes and take off. And they actually respond to the tenement fire that was mentioned on the TV earlier.
Mm-hmm. The TV talks of tenement fires in general being lit, not specifically this one. Otherwise, I'd hope that they'd be like, oh my God, that's terrible. Not just like let it happen and then hours later decide to get
their
costumes
there
and go
some,
save those
there
people.
Was, when they described the tenement fire, it sounded like there was somebody that was intentionally lighting the fires.
Yeah, they're trying. Oh, yeah, they're trying to antagonize these people to get them out of the.
Right.
Yeah, it's a.
It was interesting how they're. When they're
arson.
Well, it's interesting how when they show up on the scene of the fire in Archimedes, there's no firefighters or anything trying to put the fire.
Oh, right, right, right.
Right, there's nobody down on the streets like trying to put anything.
No, you see straight down and there's pedestrians walking by or just kind of on. Lookers, but
and they let the ramp out, and I've read a lot of stuff on this chapter, read up on a little bit of stuff, and there's always mentionings of how there's always like the sexual references or the sexual suggestion
with the bridge extending out from Archie to
even Archimedes flying out the tunnel leaving Dreiberg's that's not I don't even know that
Archimedes
that,
should be more phallic
and that's not
should be a
it is kind of phallic.
You ever seen the car that the ambiguously gay duo drives?
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
What it should look like.
They find themselves again in this whole rescue, and they have that energy again that we talked about, that same energy they had in the alley, that sexual energy almost.
Mm-hmm. Or exactly.
Like this whole experience of rescuing everybody.
Right, yeah, it just got them all excited and shit.
Yeah, right. And they went out and did both of them have the same realization that they, you know, this is what they want to be doing. This is why they used to do this.
Exactly.
This whole feeling. And
the feeling used to give them the virility and the confidence.
The clock really is at 12:55.
Right.
Let's do this.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely no reason not to.
And Driver even talks about how could he just let the clock tick out? How could he just let the clock tick away and not try to do something about it?
Yeah, okay, right.
So that whole desire, that whole mythical desire to want to be a hero.
Well, maybe he's put a positive slant on it. Now he sees it as not as something that he should be ashamed of wanting to do, that he should. As a grown man, as a responsible person, I shouldn't want to do this. But now he's you know, actually thinking, not just, hey, fuck it. We could all die tomorrow, so fuck it, basically. But he's also like, you know, I should at least try to do something good.
Yeah.
If I've only got a few days to live or something like that. So
I think it's interesting how all the people they rescue from the building are in the Archimedes.
Yeah.
And it's cool how he goes up on the roof and can control it, steer it from
the
roof.
He steers it from up there to make more room. Yeah, I guess the seat disappears. But he's only making one more
person's room. I think it's funny how they give everyone coffee.
Room for one more person. Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, there's coffee in there.
Everybody get a coffee.
Everybody get a cup of coffee.
Okay, everyone finish their coffee.
And then go downstairs.
Go downstairs. Yeah, it'd be cool.
Maybe it's because, like you were saying, I mean, it was a tenement fire set up to fucking kick these people out of their homes.
Yeah.
So maybe they're thinking, well, they deserve more than just a rescue. Let's treat them like people. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It's kind of British or something, too.
Maybe that's more. It's like, well, what do Americans do? Okay, coffee.
That's funny.
They don't drink tea.
Right, you know, like the people that just got rescued. Or, you know, like you're at sea. I don't know. It's funny. Right. Like, they're on the Black Freighter. They got rescued from the Black Freighter. I'm just kidding.
I almost suffocated from a fucking tenement fire. Give me some hot coffee right now. That's what I want. More than anything else. You got any ice water, motherfucker? You can keep your coffee.
Right. That's fucking hilarious. Anyway, everyone gets sent on their way. They've been rescued. And at the climax of the story, we have the whole sex scene with Lori. And
right, because Driver's back,
baby.
There's
a lot of meaning.
Baby.
It's not just a exactly, he's back. Dude. He's for real.
Yeah, exactly.
All of a sudden, he's virulent. Like,
right.
Hours later. This is hours after being totally...
Totally. They don't even... They do one thing.
This man that was devoid of all virility,
totally.
All of a sudden, is back on the scene with Lori. And she forgets all about John. It's a great way to express that whole feeling that they have of... You know, of they feel good. You know,
yeah, it makes them feel good. That's why they do it,
and that's what's cool. That's what that's the nice feeling that this chapter brings at the end of it. It's you know what I mean. These chapters are intense. A lot of them, and they end. They don't always have happy endings.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And this one, it gives you a sense of hope at the end of it. You know,
sure.
Like,
yeah.
These people, just how with Rorschach, the only sense of hope you get really get from Rorschach is even in the face of Armageddon, I will resist kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and that's
noble.
That's
one
of his
noble.
That's a really that's his most noble quality in a lot of ways. And with them, it's
he's
almost like they have
few,
that
actually.
Same sentiment. Only they were both in denial for a very long
They were both
time.
In denial about it, but, I mean, overall, if there's anything I want
to
say...
When it comes down to it and the clock is ticking, they're going to try to do something.
They're going to try to do the right thing, that's fine. But that's just how they rationalize it. In the end, though, what we get from this chapter is a peek into Dryberg's psyche, and more specifically, his motives for becoming a mask.
Yes.
And they're not as admirable as any of the other. I almost have more respect for, well, I don't want to go that far, but there's something more admirable. There's something more. Yeah, exactly. There's something a little bit more morally admirable about even the comedian than Dryberg.
Wow.
And that Dryberg is just an adventurer who just happens to be on the good guy's side.
Yeah.
We're just lucky that he's got that sort of sensibility
and it's
about himself.
He kind of has a. He
but
kind
he doesn't. He's not motivated by helping people.
Sure, right.
He's not selfish. I'm not saying he's a dick, but.
That reminds me of that Abraham Lincoln quote. And I don't know. This isn't verbatim, but it was. Those without any vices seldom have very many virtues.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very many great virtues. Right, so it's almost like Driver really doesn't... He's not a guy with any real vices.
No,
he
he's not.
He doesn't have, like, these fucking crazy issues like Rorschach or, like...
You're right.
Or Comedian or fucking Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but, these crazy
But he also
issues.
Doesn't have very many virtues
I mean, Dr. Manhattan is challenged by his powers.
Right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And... Rorschach is obvious, you know, we fucking
yeah,
talk
we
about
know.
It.
Yeah, 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 I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
Comedian, you know,
sure.
All, they're all, you know, challenged people. They have extreme vices, and Dan Dreiberg doesn't really have any vices. Therefore, the virtues that he have don't seem as...
Yeah, right, or outstanding
and it's
against
like
that
it's,
background
I think it's intentional
of
in his character,
vices.
It's, I think it's kind of intentional.
Well, he's an ordinary guy.
Yeah.
He's one of, just like Hollis Mason was. If you read the section... Early on, I think it's the appendage to chapter one.
Yeah.
There's a excerpt from fucking Under the Hood, and he talks about how he got into, how he worked for that mechanic or whatever, and how he got into, Hollis Mason was the same thing. Hooded Justice was already a superhero, or fucking, you know, mask, and so he wasn't like the first to do it. He just saw people doing it and thought, fuck yeah, that sounds like fun. I want to do that. I want to do that too.
Hollis Mason used to be a cop too.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Oh, it was his father who worked for the mechanic.
Yeah.
It's a little story he tells about his father working for the mechanic. But he was a cop, exactly, who wanted to do more. Okay, so Hollis Mason is more admirable than
Driver. And I think one of the reasons I like Chapter 7 is maybe there's part of me is kind of into it because my time of having been in law enforcement, and in a lot of ways that's kind of like wearing a costume, you know, when you wear when you wear the uniform in a lot of ways, the way that people look at you, definitely have to, you definitely feel,
you
mentally and physically feel different in a way because
you're
taking on that role at that
It's a role.
Wearing
exactly.
that uniform on. I understand how they feel in some ways when they're putting their costumes back on.
Oh, yeah. It's empowering.
I mean?
Yeah.
And
he's not just a dude in a Night Owl costume. He's fucking Night Owl again.
Because there's a lot of very good reasons I stopped doing it. But there's a lot of things I miss, too. You know what I mean? So I understand how it is when they're like, oh, there's all this stuff we really miss. And they're down in the basement reminiscing.
And they
have like these memories of... You know,
definitely
the villains they fought.
Yeah, right. Yeah. although Laurie and
we can make a difference, kind of feeling.
When
when
Dan and Hollis get together, they reminisce about the good old days, and that's the one place that Dan doesn't have to feel ashamed about his desire to do it again.
Yeah.
He can kind of have this guilty pleasure of sitting there drinking beers with Hollis, thinking about all the guys they put away, telling old stories again and stuff like that. All these old people they nabbed with Laurie. It's different. He's afraid Laurie's going to judge her the way he judges himself, and so he's got to be, like you said, self-deprecating.
Right.
Even to the point where when she finds the photograph and he talks about how that woman had an infatuation for him, he calls her sick and demented.
Right.
Oh, anyone who likes me must be fucking sick and demented, too. Everything sucks. That's Dreiberg before he puts the costume back on again.
Yes.
And then he's like, everything's just a case. Everything's just a problem to be solved. What's fucking next? Let's bring Rorschach.
Oh, it's like he's alive again.
Yeah, right.
Just, yeah.
But his morals, because they're not, because it's not about the moral, like a sense of moral.
Sure.
It's not, for Dreiberg, it's
he's
not
fitting,
with great power comes great responsibility.
He's fitting into that mythical
not
role.
At all.
That mythical role that he loved.
Okay,
you know,
the hero role. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
He wants
to fit into that archetype.
Right, exactly.
And he believes in that archetype. You know, that's where the power that he feels. That's coming back through him.
But he doesn't feel a moral responsibility.
That mind-body synergy, you know, like that feeling of there's been some kind of change.
Right. It's intoxicating, I'm sure.
It is, and like it can make you, I've done it before in my personal life. You know, you've done a certain thing that's definitely transformed you as a person.
Yeah, right.
And it's energizing sometimes. And he's just gone through that.
It's very real and very human, and for the first time you see what people would actually be like if they were to go out and wear costumes. They would solve one crime, and then they'd go fuck each other because they'd be so fucking. assuming that they're attracted to each other or whatever. But that's exactly what happens here. They don't go out. Okay, let's go find another crime. Let's go find more people to save.
Yeah.
No. Well, let's create a cloud of smoke around us and have sex inside of Archie. There's another tenement fire. Fuck them. The fire department will be there any minute.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm holding against them, kind of.
You guys need to be out there
working.
It's
kind of selfish, actually, in that they're doing it for their own, for the gratification
that it gives them. No, that's a totally fair criticism. You
know,
it is.
There's no, like I said,
no doubt.
There's no, with great power comes.
Like Batman. Batman wouldn't be doing that shit.
Or Spider-Man is what I'm trying to come to. There's no great, with great power comes great responsibility attitude.
Okay.
For Night Owl.
But at the end, we had this whole segue into the next issue where we they talk about, the driver is fucking feeling bold. He's like, fuck it, let's spring Rorschach. I want to figure out this mass killer.
Yeah. We got
Rorschach's right. He's convinced that Rorschach's right. He's going to spring Rorschach.
Or it's worth
and they're
going
to go and they're going to fucking figure this shit out.
Right.
And they're going to find out about this mass killer. They're going to do what they can to stop this nuclear war from happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's a real positive ending.
Definitely. Probably the most positive ending to a chapter.
I thought you'd quit, Laurie. Dangerous habits, remember? There's no such thing as quitting. Just sometimes there's a longer pause between relapses, right? Dan, was tonight good? Did you like it? Uh-huh. Did the costumes make it good? Dan? Yeah. I guess the costumes had something to do with it. It just feels strange, you know? To come out and admit that to somebody, to come out of the closet. Does it feel good? I feel so confident, it's like I'm on fire. And all the mask killers, all the wars in the world, they're just cases, just problems to solve. You know, you sound real passionate. I didn't know you could smolder. I'd hoped tonight might wake something inside you, but it sounds like it's awoken with an appetite. You're right. It has a big appetite. Insatiable, huh? Well, I'm open to suggestions. What shall we do next? I've been thinking about that. And I feel we have certain obligations to our fraternity. I think we should spring Rorschach. What?
So, what seems to be the problem?
I'm depressed. Life seems harsh and cruel. I feel alone in a threatening world where what lies ahead is vague and uncertain.
Ah, yes. Well, the treatment is simple. Shed Talk broadcasts weekly, and there is a new episode tonight. You should tune in and listen to it. I'm sure it will pick you right up.
Shed Talk? But, Doctor, you don't understand.
I am Shed Talk!
I'm not a fan of Superman.
He just set the bar pretty low.
Right. With that kind of news,
the way I always thought comics were cool.
That doesn't make any fucking sense.
I don't know.
I want to see that guy in space.
Exactly. There's nothing like, God, this is pretty good, but if he was in space.
I'm in the shed. I gotta be honest.
Please have strong opinions about shit you don't know dick about.
Shed Talk is a podcast dedicated to bringing you the best from the past and present of comics, video games, movies, and all things pop culture. You can find Shed Talk on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or directly at shedtalk.podomatic.com.